Very warm welcome. It's nice to have you here. I will talk a little bit more about who I am soon. And as I said, these guys will be here for a while and record the first intro part of today. And then when we start getting hands-on and doing labs, these people will go away again. No more recordings. But for now, if you have a question during the first part here, you'll give me the question and I'll repeat it for the recording, so that we'll get the questions recorded as well when you have any. I'm actually going to start to talk about you guys. You look amazing to me from up here. I don't know that you guys look like this, but it's Halloween soon anyway. It's tomorrow. So you are in IT, I assume. You're here for an IT camp. There's a lot of changes for IT with the Azure Cloud and these things. There's a lot going on. There are so many new awesome opportunities for you guys, new cool things that you can do with your IT infrastructure when you go to the cloud. So my first thing, I know this is a bit, you know, scary in the morning, but we're going to be together the whole day. So, you know, I'm going to start with doing the scary, let's try to raise our hands kind of thing. I want to get a gauge of the room and see where you guys are. I know it's really scary. I'm from Sweden myself, and we don't actually raise our hands either when people ask us questions. So we'll try and see what happens, right? You know, do you do anything with Azure already? My first question is usually, we have something in Azure in production today. Do you have anything in production? There's four. So not a lot of people have anything in Azure in production. We have started to fiddle with Azure at our company. We're doing some groundwork for Azure at all. Like, we have some Azure subscriptions and we're considering it. Only a few. And that means that I'm now going to assume for the rest of the day that most of the people in the room haven't really touched Azure at all. Because otherwise, the only other option is that, yes, we're finished. We will not be raising our hands when you ask questions. That's the only other option. But, you know, it's okay. I know that. I know all about that. I'm like that myself. Well, I'm here to tell you actually today that you have a lot of nice new options and features and possibilities and power coming your way with the cloud. No longer will you ever need to say to somebody who needs some IT resource that they can't have it. You know, no longer will you have to say to, as a response to a service request or whatever it is, that, you know, I'd like to have a database, and you'll have to go and say, you know, you can get that in 3 weeks or something. No, a database, you can have 200 databases in 8 seconds, right? It's like you can have it straight away, however much you need, whenever you need it. So the power for IT is limitless now. It's like you're like you were before, except with a Superman cape. It's amazing. You're going to enjoy this. If you haven't touched Azure at all, you're going to love it because it's amazing. It really is. Now, this is going to be a big piece of your life going forward. Azure Resource Manager, and aka ARM, and templates. Sometimes people say ARM templates. It means sort of the same. And you'll be doing a lot of templating, and the labs today will give you a good basic foundation for what ARM templates are, why you would use them, and how they work, and you'll be doing templates today. And I'm assuming then that this is mostly new for you guys. Have anyone heard of the concept of ARM templates? No one? Good, because then we're all at the same level. When we leave here today, you will be empowered with ARM templates, and you will be able to do pretty crazy things with this. Stuff that, you know, scripting is known to us. We know what scripting is. We can do PowerShell, awesome. That's not going away. We're still gonna be doing that, but we will have this also, and the power of this is incredible. I'm seeing now, seriously, deployments to Azure, to the cloud, using templating and things like that. I'm seeing full-blown deployments going out to do maybe a load test or something like that. Complete automated setup deployment. You just push a button, if that, and just request the test. It's going to deploy a full environment with virtual machines, with virtual networks and port settings and all of these things and databases, put some data in those, and then run a full suite of maybe load tests with thousands of machines or thousands of requests coming in per second maybe onto your system, and gathering up all the information from that and completely just deleting, erasing the environment as if it never existed in the cloud, all automated. I mean, the power of those things that we will do and can do in the cloud, it's pretty mind-blowing. So that's, you guys will enjoy the future with ARM and the cloud. So I've already, hang on. Hello, come on in. No worries, please join us. Traffic and all. Yes, so you already know that my name is Magnus Martinsson and I'm from Sweden. I run my own company called LoftySoft. So I'm not a Microsoft employee at all. I run my own company and I'm a partner to Microsoft. What I also am is that I am the first, I was the first Azure MVP of the Nordic countries, and in fact, you don't actually have an Azure MVP in Finland even today. The only Finnish-speaking, Finnish-native Azure MVP, Timo Tapanila, lives actually in Stockholm. So, so he's not officially in Finland, he's an MVP in Sweden. But so there are a few Azure MVPs now in the Nordics, but I was the first one, so I've been in the cloud for a long, long time and enjoyed this a whole lot. I'm also, as Merata mentioned, I'm also a, what Microsoft call a regional director. That means that I'm kind of a close business partner with Microsoft. I'm a part of a small selected group of people who have this role. And it means, among other things, that I get to talk to people like you. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, not only am I a Swedish person, you know, as if that wasn't suspicious enough, I also have a background in development. Yeah, I'm sorry, like, start throwing things at me. I have a background in development, and that actually works to our advantage today, because as a regional director, I more have a role of strategic and enterprise architecture and things like that. That's very common for, I work as a consultant. That's my job, that's my day job when I'm not doing this. And I help my customers reshape what they have before the cloud to the cloud. And in so doing, I do a lot of interaction with IT and IT folks such as yourselves. How do we move our virtual machines from on-premise or our actual physical servers, if we have those, from on-premise to a virtualized environment in the cloud? How do we set it up? How do we make sure it's secure? And all those things are a part of my world. But another really big part and another really important part of my world is the other piece, the development side, the line of business application side, and those things that developers do. So here's another quick question for you. At our company, we also have development and services and applications going that we deploy. Do you have that? Many of you do. Services and applications that you deploy, that developers develop and you take care of, right? And that's important, this interaction thing now with the cloud, because developers will be starting to use new services in the platform. Azure platform has a lot of services. You know this, like they have storage. There is lots of there are services like caching or a service bus or things like that. SQL databases as a service. So maybe no longer are we always required to run a virtual machine with SQL Server and then databases inside of that. Maybe we can instead just not have another virtual machine with SQL Server that we need to maintain. Instead, maybe we can only requisition and use a SQL database as a service in the cloud and not necessarily have to have a full-blown SQL Server to fiddle with. Some people may love that, and that's great. But also, if we can maybe remove a few of those management tasks, we can do much more productive things and even more things at a larger scale. So that's a big shift, a big change, that this platform offers lots and lots of platform services and even new things like that we haven't really used before. Maybe a document database. What the heck is a document database, right? Who knows, right? It's a new thing, but maybe it's an important thing, and maybe someday some application or some developer develops something that you have to maintain that utilizes a document database in the Azure platform. You guys need to know what this is. You need to know how to maintain these things. You need to know how to deploy them, and you need to know how to monitor them. What's a document database? Who knows, right? So there are new things and new options and new possibilities, which is why I think that today, give and take, you guys and me, coming from a development background, being IT people, we can actually use this to our advantage today. And I think we should utilize this opportunity. You can, like, basically, you can ask me all the questions you ever wanted to ask developers but never had the guts to ask me, or something like that. You know, you can ask me anything, and we'll have fun today. That's the point. That's the whole point. So going away from here today, you will hopefully have downloaded all the labs material, because odds are, I mean, we'll be doing labs here today, sure, hands-on, doing things, but odds are that maybe you won't have completed all of them, but you will get access to all of the material, and I advise you to download it so that you can bring it home and maybe reference it or go back to it or maybe finish some specific interesting lab that maybe you couldn't finish the whole way through. Or maybe go back to your office and tell your colleagues about this. Hey, you're into identity. Here's an identity lab for you that you can use. Maybe give it to someone else. So definitely do that. Right. Roughly, this is what we're going to be doing today. And I know there are some strange words up there that doesn't actually always make a lot of sense to IT people, like Git. What? Why do we do Git? What's up with that? I'll tell you why this is getting to be maybe useful, hopefully interesting, and probably important for you going forward. And we're also going to have Dennis coming back. We're not going to do these in exactly in order. Dennis will be coming back, and he's going to do the marketplace piece a little later. So the number two thing will probably skip down a few beats. But anyway, this is the first one, Introduction to Azure. And therefore, I'm going to switch to the Introduction to Azure presentation instead. I have some background slides for the conversation here. All right. This is Cloud Things. Important pieces in the cloud are, except for the cloud itself, mobility, I'm sure, is affecting all of you, bring your own device and all those kinds of things. Mobility is one of the top prioritized areas of our industry today. Mobility is important, super important. Social is also important, but also data. Data is super important. You know the saying that data is the new oil. The company that can process, handle and process and get information from... Do they want to come in, or what's going on? Okay. So the people who can, the company that can process more data faster will win, because that's important. We have lots and lots and lots of data, and we need to do something logical with it. So data on mobile and social, I suppose, also are important things, and none of those would work well without the cloud. You can always do anything you can do in the cloud. You can always do it on-premise or anyway without having an actual cloud. But it's going to be more painful. It's going to be easier, more powerful, and faster to use the cloud for these things. So why not go there? So I have many of these Microsofty slide decks. I wouldn't say that I love them. You know, they are what they are, produced by someone else, somebody who likes to do PowerPoint animations and little figures and stuff. Sometimes the text font is going to be really small. We'll just have to live with it. It is what it is. And therefore just ignore the slides when they are annoying and listen to me. Anyway, business innovation is important, and what I am seeing a lot of now is that a lot of the IT decisions are actually moving to the not only the business side but to the CIO. We need fast response time. We need agile approaches often to a quickly changing market and things like that. Things need to be fast, fast, fast. Okay, maybe not always. Of course, not always. There are very many things that are solid and stable over years and years, systems that you maintain, services that your company use, and things like that. But sometimes changes need to be more fast and agile, and that's when the business comes in and decides things that we need to do. They need things like increased productivity and all these nice buzzwords in really small fonts, customer growth and real-time insights and things like that. But when you have real-time data coming at you, telemetry from the systems that you monitor, you're soon going to go into big data because it's going to be a lot of it, and you're going to have to figure out how to manage that. Okay? And if you have any questions, do jump in and ask them. Again, with the lovely PowerPoint animations. So you have your data center. This is the stuff that you have. And then, you know, you might have some physical stuff, of course, because otherwise it would be difficult to have virtual stuff. But you have a physical and or virtual environment currently today. And then we get this stuff, right? So, in the cloud, you will be able to run whatever virtual machines you want as virtual machines, and that is known as infrastructure services, or IaaS, infrastructure as a service. So you'll be requisitioning and running your virtual machines in the Azure cloud. Now you can set up virtual networks of surrounding your virtual machines and join your virtual machines to these virtual networks so that no one from the outside can have access to them. There are no ports configured to gain access to your machines. So no one can actually target your machines at all. And then you can set up on-premise your connection to the cloud so that you can have VPN tunnels and other, you know, point-to-site and site-to-site network connectivity to the cloud from on-premise, which means that you can have servers showing up in your network as if they were in your data center or in your data room or whatever it is that you have, but they're not. They're actually in the cloud. But they are connected and domain joined, and everything is, you know, back to normal, except that these are virtual machines running in the platform as infrastructure as a service. And that gives you, honestly, virtually an infinite capacity. Let me just do a very brief anecdote. I do community events. It's part of who I am, I suppose. I love sharing and doing community events. And one of the things that I'm involved is an event called the Global Azure Bootcamp. It's actually been done here in Finland twice, not last year, but the years before. The Global Azure Bootcamp is one day of Azure, a Saturday, where everyone meets up and do, you know, local community events. Maybe I actually talked to the DX lead here at Microsoft, and we're going to make sure that there is one in the spring. Probably April 2nd is the date for the next Global Azure Bootcamp. But the fun thing is that a lot of places around the world on the same actual day or Earth revolution do the Global Azure Bootcamp. So 182 locations last year join this event, thousands of people doing a community event around Azure on the same day. And why am I telling you this? Well, because in this event, we also do like a shared lab thing that we prepare, and all the locations and all the attendees, thousands of people, can go ahead and deploy these labs on the same day. And we can do a shared huge compute swarm, really. with even tens of thousands of machines. The first year we did this event, we chose to use only one data center. We now use all the like 20 data centers that Microsoft have around the world for Azure, but we used one only. And we said that, you know, this is getting big, the event is getting big. Do we have, you know, is it okay if we use just one data center and fire up maybe 10,000 instances of servers just like that? You know, are the data center guys okay with this? So we literally contacted ops and the guys who actually run the data center, the Azure cloud, and we asked them the question, can we do that? Is it okay if we fire in the Northern Europe data center for Azure, fire up 10,000 instances of servers? You know what the response was? Go ahead. And that's pretty awesome. Like, there's tens of thousands of machines available for you. And even so, they still run that those data centers at an efficiency that, you know, all respect to how good you guys are with IT, but we're talking big, big scale here. They have the economies of scale. They have the big, super big scale advantage and extreme automation levels. So they will run these data centers, even with this much extra capacity, much more efficiently than anyone else in the world could probably do. And I'm not talking now only about Microsoft. AWS and the other clouds are also really, really good at doing this. Some of the best networking and data center monitoring and ops that you can possibly find. They have roughly, this is an old number, an old estimate number from maybe a couple of years ago. They have something in the size of, you know, 15,000 virtual machines per data center operator. And that's maybe not exactly the numbers that you have in your systems, right? It's that big. The locations for these data centers have, you know, in the range of hundreds of thousands of virtual machines available. So there's some capacity for you, right? The other option is on screen, the platform services. When an application is deployable to an environment which is an entirely hosted environment, there are several options in the Azure cloud and more coming. But a very common one is to run what's called web apps. And web apps is just deploying a web application onto a hosted environment. Sure, there is a physical server. Sure, there is a virtual machine on top of that. And obviously, there is an IIS running on that virtual machine. But what's exposed to you guys and to developers and anyone who wants to run a platform service, I will show you briefly later, is just, here's, you know, requisition, web application, deploy, done. You can browse to it, it's there. You don't manage or maintain or touch the underlying virtual machine, the OS, none of that. It's not, that doesn't matter to you. And then you can automatically scale this web application to a web farm with, you know, 10, 20, how many instances do you need, and automatically have a load balancer configured and set up for this, so you don't have to do that either. You just use a platform service instead of an IaaS service, right? So it's PaaS instead of IaaS. And it's very important, and that gives you tons of more power and focus to be able to not necessarily maintain lots and lots of virtual machines anymore, not for everything at least. For many things, sure, not for everything. If it's just hosting web applications, probably not run a VM in Azure and an IIS that you need to maintain and then run your web applications in there. That wouldn't make sense at all. It would not make sense one bit. This is just a web application, right? So that's a change. Any thoughts on that? Does that sound scary or does it sound good? Are you happy about this? It's good? Most people enjoy this. Like, it's not, you know, I love servers and I love virtual machines. They're fine. There's nothing wrong with them at all. But, you know, if I don't have to specifically have more of those, right? But still get the job done at the end of the day, the thing that we need to do, then that's good. All right. Exactly. Can we stop doing some things? Can we stop doing some things entirely maybe and use software as a service and maybe just Office 365 is probably the best example of this right now. Any of the people here represented that are in a company that use Office 365? Almost all of you. Well, guess what? You're already doing Azure. Not specifically that Office 365 is hosted in the Azure data centers. Microsoft actually have separate data centers for Office 365. But there is one piece of Office 365 that you already have, which is Azure. It wasn't originally. Do you know which piece I'm talking about? The Azure AAD. Here's a gentleman up front who, A for the day so far, who knows some things. The Azure AD, the AAD, is the Active Directory that maintains or takes care of authentication for Office 365. Now, when Microsoft were building Office 365, they had to have an AD story for the cloud. So they started building the AD for using with Office 365. And they used it and started to sell Office 365 to you guys. After a while, when that was matured enough, millions or even hundreds of millions of sign-ins per day, super many users, right, using Office 365. Then they sort of extracted from Office 365 the AD piece to be standalone, the AAD, and then after a while they exposed that into Azure. So now you can create however many ADs you want in the cloud, right? And originally, the features of the AAD were basically users and possibly groups and, modest set of features in the beginning. You can authenticate and you can have users. And you can also, of course, set up sync with your on-premise AD. So you're signing into Office 365 using the domain users of your corporate domain. Those were the original features, but they're now adding to those features, of course, making the AAD a full-fledged standalone AD, full-featured, so that you can actually literally, well, maybe soon, but very soon, have a full AD running in the cloud, and you don't actually have an AD on-premise. You domain join to an AD in the cloud. You outsource the entire AD thing. And that's strange as heck, if you have an AD on premise, you don't have to tear it down and use the other one. That's stupid. But no, if you're starting up a company tomorrow, let's say, and you don't actually have an AD on the ground, you could actually go for only having a cloud-based AD. And that's only the AD, right? And Office 365 is probably the most well-known software as a service offering today from Microsoft. You all use it. I've heard that Office 365 is very big in Finland. So you have booted out already the use of Exchange because, I'm sorry to say, but Exchange is going away eventually. There'll be a lot of Exchange servers around for a good number of years to come, but there won't be any new Exchange servers, I don't believe, at extreme scenarios, but they will be minuscule. Almost every company today recognize that, maintaining an Exchange server is not our core business. That's not what we do. We want email and calendars. That's what we want. We want the service, the software as a service. And that's what a lot of you will be deploying and maintaining for your organizations. The applications that you need to host and maintain could be SharePoint, could be all these things, probably most of them hosted in the cloud, and you will be sort of offering software as a service, right? You'll be running VMs or possibly PaaS services, but your offering to your customer is just a service. And that same thing is happening with the Team Foundation server. How many organizations have a Team Foundation server running right now? Not many, okay. Much fewer than I thought. Team Foundation server for development then is also going away because of Visual Studio Online. It's actually not very aptly named. Visual Studio Online really is Team Foundation server in the cloud, but yeah. Well, anyway, right? public cloud platform. Let's see what this slide says. Yeah, I don't even know why this slide exists. We'll see. Right, so we have the hybrid story and security and management that are important, right? The hybrid story is super important, and I've already, you know, touched upon it and said that you can set up, you know, your point-to-site connectivity. You can set up virtual networks in the cloud with your virtual machines and all that, and then you'll configure point-to-site connectivity from your point, which is your on-premise, to the site, which is in Azure, probably point-to-site. Or maybe there's also, you can have multiple virtual networks and you can connect them site-to-site. So there's a difference between the names there, point-to-site and site-to-site. It's all pretty much about the same thing. It's about being able to connect securely and efficiently to and from the cloud and within the cloud. And if you have multiple offices, maybe you have multiple locations in your organization, all of those can connect to the cloud. I've actually been involved in a customer case. I can tell you on a top level what we did. They needed to run Dynamics AX, which is a pretty big installation. And they also needed to have an additional, actually, for they were pharmaceutical. So they needed to have a pharmaceutical adaptation on top of Dynamics AX. Now that's actually, that's a good set of servers, maybe 10 or 10, 15 servers thereabouts. But they would, they wanted to, they had it on the ground, but they needed to make a new investment. And then they were looking at the cloud because all of the different locations they had around the world would connect to their on the ground in Sweden, you know, setup. So the locations that were furthest away had more latency. So what they did was that they set up a big virtual network in the cloud and deployed all the Dynamics AX servers that you need, your database servers and your front end servers and all of these things, to the cloud, and they made point to site connection from their 5 or 6 factories on 3 continents to connect up to the cloud. And so you can do all these things. I'm just telling you this sort of as an anecdote and tell you that I venture to say that it's virtually limitless because there's a pun intended in there. But it is virtual things, and you can do all the things that you can imagine. It's probably doable, all of it. All right? Thoughts on that? So the hybrid story is there. You will have lots of servers on the ground for a long time, I'm sure, but you will probably start using cloud options, and then you will have both. So therefore, you will have a hybrid. That's the name for that. So again, there is, yes. Rapid innovation everywhere. These nice slogan-like slides. Yay, rapid innovation. OK. Makes sense? Right. Office 365 is right there. OK. Yes, good. Now, is Microsoft the best? That is a good question. You know, it doesn't you know, surprise anyone that this is a very pro-Microsoft slide, but it is also showing that we all know that Amazon are the best at IaaS because they were there first. They have the biggest capacity. Without a doubt, they have much more capacity for IaaS than Microsoft does, even though the relative distance between Microsoft and Amazon is shrinking quite fast on the IaaS piece. This is a Gartner summary, and they don't give Microsoft full points for IaaS yet. But on their little chart that I will show you, they're actually number 2. It looks like they're number 3 here. But what Microsoft does have is a strong offering in all of the verticals here. And that's unique. No other company has this many strong positions in this many areas. Amazon being awesome at IaaS, being the world leader of IaaS, have almost nothing in the PaaS column. And PaaS, believe it or not, will be so much more important going forward than IaaS. And now you're asking me, developer guy, if that's true, and I'm claiming that it is true, but it's logical. It's true, it's going to be that way because it's super logical. I think I just moved a slide. Go back, yeah. So that's the point there from the analyst that Microsoft have this comprehensive hybrid story, and it spans applications and platforms and infrastructure, and that's why it's attractive to select to use the Azure cloud instead of using another cloud provider. Again, these are Microsofty slides, but it's kind of important still to see that. I wouldn't expect any of the competition to refute this. They would have to admit that this is actually not wrong. And if you go down and see, these are the have you seen these four squares before? These are the Gartner charts, right? The square you want to be in is the top right, because that's the leader square. The leaders are in the top right. The niche players are down here. The visionaries are here. The challengers are there, and the leaders are there. So you want to be in the leaders, where you're both visionary and a challenger. You want to be in that quadrant. These are the Gartner quadrants. And if you look at these, Gartner analyzes a lot of areas. Here's IaaS. This is Amazon, right? Ahead of Microsoft. But the relative distance between these over the years is shrinking. And then you have cloud storage. Microsoft is in the leaders. Enterprise application PaaS, Microsoft is in the leaders. You know, server virtualization, VMware and Microsoft are in the leaders. And, you know, on and on and on and on. Microsoft is always, in all of these, in the leader quadrant, and no one else is in the leader quadrant in all of them. Even though Microsoft, admittedly, are not the best at IaaS today. They're really good. But there's one who is actually better. Just to be fair and honest, right? But it's good to know. I don't think that the people here needs to be motivated to using Microsoft's technology anyway. Y'all know that Microsoft have a lot of data centers. This is actually a fairly recent slide because it shows India, 3 data centers as in production, and that just happened just now. So this is a recent one. More and more data centers are being added. Australia. Microsoft has the biggest number of regions of availability in the world. And this means an opportunity for you as well. It means that you can potentially run applications that are truly global. You can have applications that are deployed to multiple data centers, and you can use things like a traffic manager to direct traffic across the globe. So you can have applications that are truly global. I live in Malmo, Sweden, and my local newspaper is Sydsvenskan. That's the paper that I read. So when I was over in Seattle, visiting Microsoft, I'm actually going next week to the MVP Summit, so I'm really excited about that. So I was over in Seattle. It's a long way from Malmo, and supposedly, or roughly, most of the readers of Sydsvenskan are in or around Skåne, where I come from. So I was reading online the newspaper Sydsvenskan in Seattle. The experience was crap because it was so far away. The latency was killing it. It was just not fun. So with global presence of many data centers, you have the ability to deploy and run applications that are truly global, right? So let's see what we have here. Oh, this is the big slide with all of the, yeah, this is a mad slide. This is like you're going to have to bring out binoculars or something. This one is crazy. And it changes all the time because this is the big slide with everything on it. And you won't even be able to read what it says. It's like the font is in size of a few pixels. On the bottom in the Azure stack there, you have your infrastructure core services, storage being like the most fundamental foundational service that exists in the platform, because the the VHDs that you use for the VMs need to be stored somewhere, and they are stored in the storage service of the Azure platform. So that's it couldn't be more core foundational than that, I think. You have your storage and your compute with your virtual machines and such, and then the networking stack with lots of DNS and VNet and traffic managers and VPN gateways and all of that stuff. That's the foundation of everything. On top of that, you have the platform services, and this is the mad piece, which just keeps growing. and so it's my job to be an expert on Azure. Yeah, that's fun. And what does that mean? Like, I'm an expert on everything that Microsoft does? Of course it doesn't. You know, there are many things here that I'm not super familiar with and I don't use on a daily basis, of course. I use the things my customers use. All of them use storage and, you know, VMs and those basic things. But then you'll pick some things from this big map that makes sense to you. And you need to be aware as IT people that this exists. That people will be building services using these things and many more, right? And you need to understand what to do about that because you'll be maintaining it. That's just a fact of life going forward. So there are very, very many things in this. On the large scale there, you have the compute. It's funny, compute is there and compute is also there. Developer services for development, not so interesting to you guys. Lots of data services for maintaining and managing data, doing searches and stuff, but also the analysis on data and the IoT scenarios with streaming huge amounts of telemetry from sensors and things and gathering that data and making sense of it and using it for something. Integration pieces, that's super important. So you can do, you know, hybrid connections and BizTalk services and these kinds of things. Integration, that's important. There are so many things in the platform. And also then third-party pieces, right? There's a store marketplace, little shopping bag there. Third-party pieces. Good friend of mine, another RD called Chris Old, is his name, and he said that, you know, building applications in the future is less and less about building services and more about bolting them together. You don't necessarily always have to build all the services yourselves. You just pick up services that exist, maybe in the platform, maybe third-party offerings that also are available in the platform, and you just use them and bolt them together in the configuration that makes sense to your business. Instead of maintaining them, instead of building them and taking care of them and evolving them, you use a service. That's gonna make you flexible and fast. So, let's have a little look at least, right? Let's take a portal approach in the Azure portal and look at that now. And that's not primarily the approach we will be using when we're doing, because you guys don't do, normally you don't do these GUI things where you have wizards and GUI stuff that you have to like click and configure and type things in little boxes and stuff. No, you do scripting, right? And we're gonna do a lot of that with ARM templates, but you can always go to the Azure portal, and that's this. This is in the browser, by the way. I'm in full screen mode in the browser. Have any of you seen this portal? Have you seen this? Have you been there? A few, but many have not. This is a preview portal. The little green on the side there says slash, it says preview, okay? That's the preview portal, because Microsoft currently have two. You know, not to make it confusing or anything. And to make it even more fun, they are officially named the Management Portal. That's the current one. I'll show you in a second. And that one is called the Management Portal. And the other one is called the Preview Management Portal, just so we won't get confused at all, right? So this is the Preview Management Portal. And the other one, so that's the you have to have that one right now. So let's go to manage. The other one is on the URL manage.windowsazure.com. You know that Azure was used to be called Windows Azure, but not to alienate all the people who don't actually do Windows, they do Linux. Microsoft decided to rebrand the whole platform from Windows Azure into Microsoft Azure. And in fact, some of this material that we are using today, which is new, sometimes actually still says Windows Azure. This is the current portal. And you can see a bunch of stuff that I have in my Azure account there, actually. I thought I was in full screen mode. What happened with my full screen? Yeah. There we go. I am signed in to this current or the management portal, and I can see all my stuff. But this graphical representation has its limit because of the many because of several things, but mainly maybe because of this list getting longer and longer and longer with all the different services that are available in the portal. So this is going away. It's there now, and lots of things that you would like to do if you want to use a portal, you have to do inside here because it only exists here. And the preview portal is getting more and more features, so soon it'll be feature comparity, and then at that point they will remove preview from the other portal and maybe say old portal on this one. As you can see, if you have good eyesight, it says magnus@loftysoft.com up there, and there's a little icon of like a badge, right? That means that I am signed into the portal using a domain account with my domain. So I'm a domain user in the portal right now. I can also sign into the portal using a Microsoft account, but that's not a domain account. It's a separate thing, right? But the portal does support signing in using a domain account, and I do that all the time now. Nowadays, I do that. And again, this is now the preview portal, and I'm also signed in with my same domain account in that portal. So this is nice. You can do really cool things in here. We're going to have a look at a virtual machine. That's the first thing we're going to do. Actually, I'm going to first go to the marketplace. We will come back to the marketplace later. But in the marketplace, you see that you have lots of things that you can sort of buy and requisition, not only from Microsoft, but from lots of other people as well. So say I click on compute. You can see here that there are lots of different offerings of compute that you can run. You know, it's no longer news that you can run Oracle databases in Azure, right? That when that came out first, it was like, what? It's kind of cold in hell right now, right? Microsoft running Oracle in their platform? What the hell? But you know, it makes sense if you think about it that Microsoft doesn't invest several billions of dollars in infrastructure around the world and then alienate some users of that. That's not a good marketing strategy. But you can run also application stuff like Java things there. There's so many things. Some of it is from Microsoft. Some of it is from other suppliers, right? You can run your Linux servers there. You can run Ubuntu and a bunch of other ones. And that's another one where it's like, what? Another day cold in hell, right? but now, in fact, Microsoft is today the biggest open source contributor to Linux. The biggest, not a big one, but the biggest. So that makes sense too. But I mean, there are so many things that you can just pick up and use here. Let's pretend your company needs to run a bunch of WordPress sites. Why not just fire up a WordPress pre-made VM, just start it up and it's there? So there are so many options in here. But I guess the first one Microsoft would still recommend would be the Windows Server option, right? So clicking on the Windows Server option, that gives me bunch of different Windows servers that I can just go and create right now. We have the Windows Server 28 R2 SP1 is still available, but I suppose they will be recommending Windows Server 2012 R2 data center right now. It's probably the recommended version. But there are other ones in here as well. You know, HPC pack version, blah, 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 this and that. Let's go and do a Windows Server. You know, just because we can. And you get some information, and there are some deployment models here, two of them, and we're going to come back to and talk to that. Classic is the one, they call it Classic, it was the first one. They want to have a classy name, I suppose, right? But Resource Manager is the new option, and that's the one that we'll be focusing on now going forward, but I'm using the first one here. So I can now create it. Let's say I want to create a VM. Magnus Finland, is that available? Yes, I have to have a unique name for that one. That's the host name is Magnus Finland.
You have to have the unique by in your account or globally?
Globally, for these, oh. Yes. Yeah, I know. But you can put your DNS on top of that, so it doesn't really matter. You can call them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plus your company name, I suppose, to make them unique for you, but not unique globally. Pricing tiers means, in this case, what size of VM will you run? You can double click to get all of them. So Microsoft offer a lot of different virtual machine sizes. This account actually doesn't have access to all of them that's on this specific Microsoft account that I'm in right now. But you know, there are many sizes of virtual machines that you can choose from with, you know, 16 cores or 4 cores or whatever, and how much RAM and so on and so forth. But for a demo, I can just start a really small one. Let's use a one with a quarter of a core. Just a little tiny one. That's a cute. Let's use that. Because you know, it doesn't matter, I'm just doing a demo. And if you're only doing something just for testing something small, you might do that as well, because you're paying by the minute here. So every minute that I use this machine is what I'm paying for. When I shut it down, when I hit stop, I don't have to delete it. When I hit stop, like equivalent to power off, it's not costing me anything, or it's costing me very little, only the storage cost for the VHDs, which is very small. There are a bunch of things that I can set up here. I will create the resource group just because. We'll come back to what resource groups are. Resource groups have to be unique inside of my Azure subscription, though, so that's better. And let's put that somewhere close, right? Oh, this is very limited, this account. I don't know why it's so super limited here. This list should be very much longer. I don't know why I can only see these few. Ha, funny. Okay, we'll use Central US just because. All right, so now I'm creating a virtual machine in Azure. So that's the wizard version of doing this, right? Step, 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 and fill in, and go back, right? That's not the efficient way of doing it, but it's a way of doing it, and it's a valid way. Right now, in the data center in Central US, a virtual machine is being provisioned for me with the the things that I wrote there, like the username and such, right? Is being provisioned for me, and it's being allocated and set up for me and connected, you know, to the internet. And by default, it's going to have a couple of ports. I think that remote desktop is by default activated when you create them in the portal here. I can shut that off. I can remove all the port mappings to my server and have a server running with no ports to it at all. And then I can set them back up again when I want to connect to the machine. I can have machines running that no one can contact. There's no attack surface on this machine, zero. This is just a standalone machine. I didn't even put it inside of a virtual network or anything, but it's just a standalone server booting up right now. It takes a few minutes to boot these things, but still, then it's mine. Then I can do what I want with it. And I have full control of the disks on this thing. So I can copy the disks, I can back up the disks, I can do whatever I want with the disks. They are in my storage account. And I didn't specify a storage account for this thing, so it's actually creating for me a storage account also. Didn't have to do anything else. quick demo. And on the platform services side, the demo is even faster. Let's say I want to create a web application. I'll go in and click Web App. And I'll give it a name. This is a domain. This is a DNS entry. So I'll say Magnus Finland is actually available. And I'll say resource group. And then we'll see if we can put it in somewhere close. Oh. Right. I'll use that one. I could say I want to have it somewhere else. Yeah, location. Let's put it closer. North Europe, close to where we are. Pricing tier here also. There are many pricing level options that I could use, even down to a free option. Yes, free option. This is not a production worthy level actually, but it's free. So there we're creating a website, okay, web application. Now this thing actually goes a lot faster. The VM is still booting up and will still be booting up for a while. But the web application should be available in a Microsoft minute soon. Come on, work with me. Please? And sometimes it's faster than this. But today, things are moving in slow motion. Come on. You're screwing up my demo. You can click on this thing and see that it's going on, it's deploying. There's, you also get a little indication up here that some deployments are running, things are happening right now. It's a little bit disconcerting that it actually takes, you know, what are we going on now, 20, 30 seconds? Not good enough. I've booted up web applications in the matter in seconds, like 2, 3, 4 seconds, and then I have a web application. But this thing is still going. And also another funny thing is that sometimes this, again, preview portal doesn't actually always refresh when you do things. Not always. So sometimes you have to F5 the thing to make it load again. I'm actually amazed that this web application deployment is taking so long. It might be, you know, the longest I've ever seen right now. Just to be sure that nothing hinky is going on with the GUI, with the UI, we'll refresh the browser just to see. See, now deployment succeeded anyway. And then actually when in the GUI here, when the deployment succeeds, it actually opens up this vertical thing here called a blade with the information about the web application. So I can actually click on this and browse to it right now. You can also browse to magnusfinland.azurewebsites.net if you want to. It's there. It has a DNS entry. It's a web application. It's live. So I could now deploy a web application to this, and I'm good to go. Then, of course, I can do DNS stuff and a bunch of other features on top of that if I like. But this is now live. It's there right now. There's no backstory. There's no anything. And actually, for our user group, we have a conference for our user group in Sweden called Cloud Burst, a small 2-day conference. And we use a free web application for that, for our conference, because of course we don't get a lot of traffic on this little web application. If I scroll down on cloudburst.azurewebsites.net, you will see the latest speakers from our last round. There's Timo. he was there. And all the videos are there. These are videos on Channel 9, so you can look at those if you like. There are some really good presentations, like The Art of Modern Azure Deployments, maybe something that could interest some of you, and a bunch of other nice presentations. So that's seriously how effective and fast you can deploy things. This is a good presentation for you guys also. Real World 2 Speed IT by Michael Stevenson. Really good presentation, I recommend it. And many of the other ones are more focused on development, but there are some IT focused or related presentations there. So this application runs in Azure. We just deploy, go, right? Fun. So I think we're gonna go mostly away from this now. These slides and go into other stuff. Yeah, let's show this last one also. Compliance audits and certifications thingy. And that's important for lots of reasons. You all have compliance rules and regulations you have to live by. EU standards and such certifications and data sovereignty rules and laws and things like that. Now, Microsoft isn't the only one doing work in this space, but all of the cloud vendors are. But Microsoft, I know for a fact, are the ones that are the best at this, without a doubt. There's a place where Microsoft can really, really boast that they are good. And if you go to azure.com, the site, you can go into the documentation and down to, let's see, where is it now? They keep moving things around for me. Identity and access management, there was developer services. Where's the, I can't even find it right now. It'd be good if I could, right? Cloud you can trust, maybe? Why Azure? Cloud you can trust. They have a trust center. Down the URL is down under support. They have something called the Trust Center, the Microsoft Azure Trust Center. And on this page and the subsequent pages, they have all this stuff about compliance and transparency and privacy. You own and control your data, etc., security, where you can go and read all about the work that Microsoft do around security, why that is. Of course, it's important to you. You must know that your data is your data and it's secure and all these things before you can actually use the cloud. And you have to sometimes also prove this to maybe customers or your boss or maybe in a security audit by the government. Things like this are important to us. And this is the space where you go and read all about that. I'm not a lawyer. But you know, all of the stuff is there. It's an exercise for the suit people to dig into that, right? I just wanted to point it out that this is also an important thing for you to know where it is. Okay. Actually, that's the intro part, the intro presentation for this. See how the you see the server there is actually still booting up, right? If I go into the, let me show you one thing. I created what's called a resource group. And in this resource group, you can see that I now have lots of stuff, of resources. I just created a server and a web application. Why do I have so much stuff? Well, this is my web application. This is the pricing for the web application, and I can have multiple web applications on the same pricing tier. So that comes to on the side. This is monitoring for my web application. So these are for my web application. These other ones are for my virtual machine. That's the actual virtual machine. That's the storage for the disks of the virtual machine. That's the virtual network that automatically gets created a little one for just one virtual machine. There, okay, so that's the networking piece. And the other one up there is what's called a cloud service. And a cloud service is sort of, you can think of that as the interface between the data center and the VM. It's the thing that maps the load balancer of the Azure cloud onto your VM so that traffic comes to some DNS entry which corresponds to your VM. Then you can get into the configuration of this guy, and there you can open and close the ports that I talked about. So the virtual machine will have the firewall ports and everything that you're used to, but the data center also does mapping from the DNS entry, traffic coming in to a specific port on a specific IP address inside of the DC, right? And that's the cloud service that manages that. So these things here are things that are related to your VM that you need to run your VM. That's why you get lots of stuff in the list, but it's not intimidating or anything. It's just it's just a fact of life. All right? So that was the first piece, ladies and gentlemen. Any thoughts, questions on this? It's dead silence. I know about Swedish and Finnish audiences. Yeah, you guys don't actually talk, do you? No,
we are listening.
Yes, you're listening intently. So here's how you know if a Swedish audience member is content with the presenter. That's how you know they like what they see. A Swedish audience is typically like that. I am listening intently to what you're saying. Therefore, you're not shit. Right? If I didn't like what you were doing, I would be doing other things, right? So I appreciate your attentiveness. It means that I'm not completely botching this intro. Good. Awesome. So we're going to stick around for just a little while longer for the video, guys, right? And then we're going to have a break. I think it's break time soon. We've been going for a while. I have to set my computer in presentation mode. Anyway, going back to the introduction to Azure slide. Right. We're going to be doing that later. When we do our first lab, those of you who need can get an Azure Pass code from me and activate a trial with a little amount of usage Azure Pass now, today. But if you already have Azure, you don't need one. You don't actually have to activate one. You do it if you need it. Because in all honesty, it's a little bit messy. And we'll come back to this when we start doing the first labby thingy. So I'll jump past these slides that I put there and come down to, let's see. I thought I had one. Where is my next? Yes, I already moved the second piece to last. So number two is actually going last. And that's the, I told you, the Azure Marketplace thing, where the Microsoft person will talk about the marketplace and the opportunity for marketplace usage and such. And that's an important thing, but that will not be presented by me. That will actually be presented by a Microsoft person who will be here with us later. The thing I'm going to now is then, you know, subsequently, is number three. That's the piece we're doing now. When we're starting to talk about ARM, Azure Resource Manager and templates, and also, oddly enough, about Git. Why? Why do we want to talk about Git? Git is source control, right? This is a place to normally host source code, that developer's code, in project repositories. They can check in and check out code and do coding on their machines and check in the changes, and you have a repository of code. Now, ARM templates are text files of JSON. That's what they are. They are text files that contain JSON text, like JavaScript, object notation, data that scripts out and describes your environment. That's what they are. You might be in the future be having lots of these different script files. So somebody comes into your office and say, I need a database, please. You can just fire off a template and give them a database right then and there and set up security for it and everything and just give them access to a new database. Now you probably need a template for deploying a database. And then maybe many, many, many other templates, right? And those templates will probably be maintained by you, most likely versioned over time by you. And that means that you will have text files of text that change over time. You might want to have a repository for these where you can check them in and check them out and version them and compare history of the old versions of these files and so on and so forth. You might be needing something like a source code repository. And all honestly, probably then you might be using Git. Okay? That's why it's there. It's a new thing for most of you, I'm sure, but it's also a very, very handy thing. And we're going to be looking at that maybe for some of you for the absolute first time today. Who knows, right? But it's just one of those things. Okie dokie. We're going to dig into the presentation for this. I'm going to try to be brief. How much do I have here? Too much. Yeah, way too much. We'll be brief. We'll do like a little presentation round more, and then we'll have a break, and we'll send the video guys away. So then we can speak freely, right? We're still on video, so I can't say what I want to. No, I'm just joking. So basically, all of the little sections we have kind of look like this. It's not super interesting. There's a big scenario here. You can download all of these and sort of get into the mode. Don't read this now, please. You can get into the mode of you know, what's the case here that they are describing within this lab. You have a scenario thing that we can just, why are they doing this, right? What's their motivation, and does that apply to me at all? To what I do, but it's a long text and we won't be reading that now. Here's basically what we're going to do. We want to learn about these templates. We want to understand where we can get a list of already pre-made quick start templates that we can start playing with and looking at. Then there's a big repository on GitHub for that, an official list of community contributed templates that already exist that you can just open up and look at. And that's actually part of the lab. Instead of you starting with a blank, you know, notepad, oh, let's write a template. Yeah. We're going to go and grab some templates that already exist, and you can start from there. And then, actually, another really weird thing here. What the? Visual Studio Code? It's Visual Studio. Arr. We don't do that. We're IT folks. No, I agree. You know, there's no law that says you must use Visual Studio Code. It's one option of looking of opening up text files that contain templates, right? But you could use Notepad or your favorite text editor. I don't care which one, but you will need some kind of text editor for looking inside of your template files. Okay, and Visual Studio Code is one option, and that's installed in the lab environment that you will get access to. So you can actually fire up Visual Studio Code and get, you know, a little color coding on the JSON text, right? Just so that you can see it nicely. All right, that's what we're doing. And then we're going to take these templates and do a deployment of a template, and you will be, you know, modifying these templates and see how a modified template that you hand modify can change the deployment that happens in the cloud. Okay? Original template, original the way it was, then you change it, and then, whoa, lo and behold, you get a different type of server. Okay? That's what we're doing. So that you will see the sort of the power of you manipulating these templates. All right? That's the whole thing. So, Azure Resource Manager. I've been saying this over and over again. Azure Resource Manager is a way to script out your environments and maintain these environments. You can have a full script for an entire production environment. Remember the original, the intro example that I said, like a full scripted environment that creates itself in Azure, and then you run load tests on that. You can have a script for that, a template for that. So I don't know that this slide is very fun to look at. Common use cases, well, actually, I don't care much for this slide either. Enterprise systems and integrators, sure. Corporate IT, that's you guys, right? You're corporate IT, right? Most of you? You consider yourself corporate IT? use case. I guess you're involved in this somehow. Let's move on. Now, Azure templates, there are templates at this URL here on GitHub. I can control click, I think, to go there. Did I? It's always interesting to see if I, there we go. So I'm browsing there now to github.com/azure/azure-quickstart-templates. That's a great URL. You might be going there soon. In here is a long, long list of community templates that people have built and contributed here. So you can go into this long list and find really cool things like, hey, let's create a Linux VM serial output. Cool. Let's set up a Redis cache. Let's, you know, create subnets and virtual networks using a template. And a bunch of templates here for you to use. We'll be using one, I think this one, the most basic, you know, super basic thing that you could ever do is a template to create a Windows virtual machine. So that's the first thing we do. Let's create a basic virtual machine, like I did in the portal with the step thing, but from a template, okay? And then you will take the same, you will take this template from here, from online, download it and edit it and look at it, and then you'll deploy that, and then you'll change some stuff inside of this template, and you'll deploy a new deployment with the changed template. That's the lab. That's the first lab. And also that, of course, involves that you actually have an Azure subscription and you can actually get online. So the first lab will be a little bit about that as well. Okay, and these are JSON files. Okay, now we're getting there, right? Now we're starting up. In fact, I have Visual Studio Code, so I don't know that maybe I prefer to open up this template inside of Visual Studio Code. Then it looks like this. Then you have, you know, I don't know, what do you call these in Finland? Do you call them mustaches or do you call them seagull wings? These little squiggly ones, right? Those ones anyway. They're sort of surrounding different sections in your template here. If I go to, let's see if we can find something that makes any sense. See what we have. Virtual network interface. IP addresses. There's lots of very nice stuff in here. This was what I was looking for, the virtual machine. The template for the actual virtual machine starts there and goes on for a bit. And it describes, you know, what operating system, what version, and where are my disks for this thing? I need VHD disks, right, to attach to my machine so I have something to have my operating system on and maybe some other additional storage. All of these things are defined inside of this template. Maybe it looks a little bit daunting now it's the first time you see it, but don't worry, you'll get into this quickly. And it all follows, you know, the same pattern. You have a text file of template, And it's really sections like this. And then you can just, this template, I can execute this template using PowerShell and deploy this template to the cloud using PowerShell, okay? So it's not magic, it's just a really, really structured way for you to define your machines and your environments and all of these things. But I suppose since none of you had done ARM templates before, this is all new to you, right? This is all new? Yes, all of you nodding. Good. Simpler than they look, so they're, Microsoft is trying to convey a sense of don't panic here. there's a schema and a version on your templates. You can see that this template follows this specific schema defined and by a version and such. There will be future versions, of course. You can send parameters into your template. That's important because maybe you don't want to store the admin password inside of this script file. That's probably not a good thing to do. So you can actually send in that as a parameter instead. so that you type in the parameter when you execute your PowerShell script. You can have actually a parameter file that goes with it. So you can have multiple parameter files that you have securely on your disk somewhere encrypted or something like that. But these templates themselves, without the passwords, are completely harmless. They don't, you know, they're not dangerous to spread around so long as they don't contain any secrets. Okay? The username and passwords and such can be domain user accounts and things like that, right? So you don't have to worry about storing secrets inside of your templates. You can send parameters. Variables, you need a lot of variables because you reuse things over and over again inside of your templates. Maybe location, West US in this example, is something that you need to reuse over and over again inside of your template so that you put your storage disks and your VM in the same data center. That's probably a good idea, right? But your template can actually deploy multiple servers to multiple data centers. There's nothing stopping you from having that inside of your template, but it's logical to maybe reuse the concept of location. So you have variables. And then you have your resources, right? I just showed you the VM resource before in Visual Studio Code. Here is a storage account, microsoft.storage/storage accounts. And here's a storage account. And here we have Microsoft.network public IP addresses. Now, don't worry, you don't have to remember or learn all of these things here. There are many of them, and there will be more, and they might even possibly change. But still, there are so many, you don't have to remember this. You will have what's called IntelliSense, so you can have suggestions on what options you have to enter here. You know, how do I know which data? How do I know the names of the data centers? Well, you'll get help with that, right? So don't worry. Here's an example of that. You can say, well, the default value, if I don't specify what type of operating system I want, it's going to select 2012 R2 data center for my virtual machine. But I could also choose from these other ones that are valid options in this context. I might be doing a 28R2 SP1, more legacy server, because I need a legacy server. I need an older version for some reason, right? So common parameters are things like location, username, and password. These are normal things. T-shirt sized, how big is this thing? Small, medium, large, extra large, t-shirt sizes. That's a common type of parameter to say how big, right? And things like that. This will be more, close to you soon when you start doing the lab. And then when I have a JSON file, when I have a template, JSON is JavaScript object notation, so that's what that means, right? And when I have one of these templates and I want to deploy it, I can actually deploy it using PowerShell. Now that actually it takes as long when you deploy it in the port. It takes equally long when you deploy it through the portal, but it's easier to see something happening in the portal. It looks a little bit prettier because if you execute a long-running PowerShell commandlet, you know it's going to stand there for a long while, and it doesn't appear as if anything is happening, right? At least you get a nice animation in the portal. But you can use the commandlet as you see down here, right? New Azure Resource Group deployment, blah blah blah. What's the name of this deployment? And here's my template file. Execute. Run this template. That will mean that this VM will be created. Okay? But you can also run the same thing inside of the portal. That's why you're seeing fragments of GUI here on the page. Let's go to the portal again and do. Let me see where I find that. So if you don't know where something is, you can always click on everything in the marketplace and you can start writing, let's say, template. Ah, template deployment. Maybe that's what we want. Ah, Microsoft Compute template deployment. OK, template deployment. Create. See what happens, right? Ah, template, good. And then there's like a default, almost completely empty template here. But if I want to, and you will probably be doing this later, I just wanted to familiarize you with, this is not scary, just show you that if I wanted to deploy this template, I can copy the whole text here, and I can go into this, and I can paste the whole template here and say save. Now this template is inserted here, and I will then, this is funny, this is actually quite cool. Now that I put this template in there, the next thing I will click on is parameters, and guess what? The portal will extract the parameter notations inside of my template and give me fields to enter the data for my templates, and even have the pre-selected options that I showed you before, right? It populates the drop-down list with the proper options that I have defined in my templates. So this piece was created now by the portal by looking at my template and saying, okay, which parameters do I need to specify before I can actually execute this template? And then when I fill this out, I'm not going to do it now. Then when I've filled it out, I can, you know, specify the things that I need to specify, where do I deploy, and more things, right? And then I hit create. And that's going to execute the template the same as if I ran it from my command line as a commandlet, right? As a PowerShell thing. Same thing, no difference. Okay? The GUI version and the command line version. So that's what we're going to be partying on, folks, soon. See what we have here more. So you're going to get access to a lab environment after the break, and you're going to start doing the first lab by doing this. And again, I told you about Git, okay? Git is an option, and in this lab you will actually create a place, a GitHub account, if you like, where you know you can store your templates. And it's just a toy because it's just doing labs. But they want to, Microsoft wants to familiarize you with the notion that you might need some sort of repository for your templates, because you might have many of these and you might version them over time. Sometime in the future, the next version of Windows Server might come out, and you might need to go into your actual templates and search and replace the server version from one OS to the next OS and change your templates. And then you, after you've changed them, you want to check in those templates in your repository and have them securely stored, right? And then you can actually go back in history in there and see, well, what did this value used to be? I know that this is not something that many IT people normally do, but I suppose learn to love it is good in this scenario. Visual Studio Code is an option for you to use. Thank you.